Thank you for standing by, and welcome to Volvo Holding North Jänvining Q4 results call. At this time, all participants are in listen-only mode. There'll be a presentation followed by a question-and-answer session, at which time, if you wish to ask a question, you will need to press star one on your telephone. Must also advise your meeting is being recorded today on Tuesday, the 1st of March, 2016. And I would now like to hand the conference over to your speaker today, Mr. Erik Rasmussen. Please go ahead, sir.
Yes, thank you. Thank you so much, and welcome everybody to the Q4 2015 presentation. As you've probably seen from the material, the Q4 for us was a challenging quarter. We saw pressure on profits from very challenging markets across the board, in general offset by our cost reduction, the NG200 program, but also our continuing efforts to increase upstream prices to normalize margins. We will get back to that a little bit further on in the presentation. But overall, we saw a reduction of 4.6% reduction in waste volumes compared to the same quarter last year. Beyond that number, we saw an increase actually in the recycling fractions, whereas the ferrous volumes were down almost 30%. So a very sharp reduction in the metals division. This again led to a reduction in operating revenues of 4.4% compared to same quarter last year, which again led to a drop in gross margins of 1.6 percentage points from 50.6% in Q4 2014 to 49% in Q4 2015. Our EBITDA on a comparable level came in at 51.6 million compared to 55 million in Q4, whereas the adjusted numbers were 57.1 million in this quarter versus 89.1 million in 2014. The NG200 program are being implemented according to plan, and the operating costs in the quarter were reduced by a net of 8 million. Later on, we will show you how the NG200 program compares on an apple-by-apple basis. I'm turning the page to the page called EBITDA snapshot for Q4 and year to date. And here you will see the comparison of Q4, where the operating revenue came in a little bit higher than 1 billion NOK, a little bit down from Q4 2014, as we just said. And here we also see the reported EBITDA of 52 versus the 55 in the same quarter last year. The big difference is, of course, the adjustments, where we last year had larger adjustments, whereas this year we only have 5 million adjustments, so that the adjusted EBITDA for the year, Q4, is 57 versus the 89. You will find all these adjustments on page 9 in the Q4 report on an annual basis. And as you will see there, you will see that a lot of these adjustments were relating to restructuring costs and so forth that we booked in 2014, whereas we have not done the same thing in 2015. There are also some points there regarding lawsuits and so forth. On a 12-month basis, you will see that the year ended then with a little bit less than 4.1 billion in NOK in revenue, a little bit less than the full year 2014. And the reported EBITDA came in then at 362 million NOK versus 345 million in the full year 2014. And again, you will see very few adjustments this year versus larger adjustments for 2014 of 57 million. And again, I refer to the table which reconciles EBITDA to adjusted EBITDA on page 9 in the Q4 report. On the other hand, you can see the same type of restructuring costs listed on the left-hand side of this page. We did have some special items in Q1 and Q2 related to the closure of Mongstad, sorry, the cleanup of Mongstad and subsequent closure, and also to the implementation of the NG200 program. As you remember, we had no special items in Q3, In Q4, we have had a very special situation where we actually saw incineration plants refusing to take in more volumes. And as such, we had a rather drastic situation where we had to handle and bale and store a lot of the RDF waste for energy products, which again led to increased operating costs. This is what we call special items in Q4, of approximately $4 million-$6 million in disruption/waste inventory buildup costs. So all in all, if you add all these things up, we have listed that as $27 million-$28 million of special items on the full year figure. Moving on to the next page, the adjusted earnings by segment. If we turn to the division recycling, there you will see an increased top line, which is rather good, I believe, you know, in the current market, but a sharp reduction in EBITDA from 43 million to 35. The reasons behind this is that we have actually been able to slightly increase the upstream volumes in a market that has, you know, not so much growth due to the sort of underlying Norwegian industry growth. But here we got the full pressure from the low demand from the incineration plants that I just referred to, which, you know, both increased gate fees, but also led to the chaos costs that I referred to in terms of increased handling and baling and storage. We also were hit by falling commodity prices because, as you remember, we have had a rather successful program of hedging metal prices, but the metal that we sort out of the mixed waste is obviously a fraction that we don't pay for, so we are not able to hedge out that cost. And as the metal prices fell quite dramatically in the quarter, this reduced our gross margins. On the other hand, the cost and productivity improvements of the NG2L program is offsetting these effects to a certain level. So we are very happy that we are at this point 20 months into that cost reduction program, and that program is continuing forward with full strength. In Division Metal, Q4 was a horrible quarter to say the least. As I said, we had a very, very large drop in commodity prices, and that was both on ferrous and non-ferrous products. And the margins were actually protected by our program of hedging metal price risk, both from the operating procedures of not having anything to hedge, but also from our back-to-back contracts and our financial hedges. So we were protected on the margin side. But the place where we were not protected was in terms of volumes, because the metal prices fell so sharply that the volumes basically stopped and people started to hoard volumes. This meant that for us, we have less volumes going through our fixed cost base and our plants, reducing utilization and then leading to a reduction in EBITDA. Again, the NG200 program is helping us here as well, because over the past 20 months we have been able to reduce the fixed cost base significantly. So if it had not been for both the very successful hedging policy and the reduced cost base, the situation in metals would be, you know, quite dramatically otherwise. But in any case, not a good result for Q4. Also in industry and offshore, what we see, and you will remember this from the last report, we see the drop in volumes and revenues from the oil and gas sectors, and also sectors influenced by the oil and gas sector, so reducing the overall volumes and revenues. And again, we are quite far in the NG200 program, but at the moment, we are also taking some rather drastic steps in order to reduce capacity, i.e., we have decided to close the Mongstad plant based on sort of the volumes that we can see in the foreseeable future out there, also without the Statoil contracts. On household collection, we see a little bit of increase in revenues, but a drop in EBITDA. This is basically referred to two specific contracts that are started up and have some significant startup costs, especially the contract for the Norwegian municipality, RoAF. So, all in all, a rather weak quarter for all of the main operating divisions. On the other hand, the remainder smaller divisions actually had the opposite development, so that also offset a little bit of the overall bottom line picture. Next page on market conditions. I referred to the situation in metals. You probably be aware that the ferrous metal prices fell another 20% during the quarter, so that the year-end prices actually ended almost 37% lower than the mid-year prices. So, we have actually not seen the price levels on ferrous at this level since the credit crunch. So, all in all, I think this, as I said, I think we are able to protect the margins from this, but the actors in this value chain are hoarding metals because they all feel that these prices are cheap. Our policy is not to do that, so we have, you know, high throughput and good margins, but lower volumes over a fixed cost base. We see the same picture, obviously, for non-ferrous as well. Both the copper and aluminum markets are oversupplied and have had some a rather dramatic development over the quarter, a little bit hedged against the Norwegian krone, which has gone the other way. So in a sense, sort of buffered the blow on those markets. And we are seeing at the moment a little bit of signs of supply adjustment. So over the last couple of weeks, we have seen a little bit of strengthening here. But we are at almost historic lows now, both for ferrous and for aluminum. And I guess copper has a little bit higher than the historic low, so there is a little bit more potential for a further drop there. In terms of wood chips, we have our own analysis indicate a very high correlation of the price, downstream price of wood chips with the average temperature in the Scandinavian market. And as you probably experience, we've had two very mild winters now, which means that the incinerators are fully stacked in their inventories. We're talking about, you know, maybe  3 to 4 months of inventory levels. This is putting some quite heavy pressure on downstream prices on wood chips, which we are also seeing now coming into 2016. On the other hand, we have been able actually to get some very, very good margins out of wood chips based on two factors. One is our program to increase quality. And so we have actually, in terms of customer service, we are now rated as the top-tier producer of wood chips to the different incinerators in Sweden. As such, we are able to both actually be able to deliver and also to command a better margin. And on the other hand, we've had a very successful program here to increase our upstream prices. So wood chips have actually over the last quarter and year seen a margin increase, which is quite good in a very, very difficult market. The situation on waste energy, or AKA refuse-derived fuel, is a little bit same as for wood chips, challenging markets because of the mild winters. But here we are seeing additional pressure from the increased U.K. exports into the Swedish market, which sets the reference price downstream for also the Norwegian market. So we have seen a quite dramatic increase in gate fees over a relatively short period of time. And in addition, we actually had a situation in Q4 where some of the incinerators actually refused to accept further deliveries, which again led to all the chaos costs that I referred to earlier. We have been able to mitigate this effect to a certain degree by increasing upstream prices. So we did this also in Q4, and we've analyzed this effect lately. So we see that our price increases have actually taken hold also on average, and we are also seeing that our competitors are increasing upstream prices, which we are very satisfied with, because at the end of the day, this is an industry program with industry squeezed margins, and as if we are able to get into a scenario where the whole industry are offsetting, you know, increased downstream prices with increased upstream prices, then, you know, we should all protect our margins. We are at least seeing signs that this is happening, although we want to be careful to make any predictions about the highly competitive nature of the upstream markets. On paper, we have seen a very good paper market over both last year and also in Q4. Our gross margins in paper have been rather good, but we do expect prices to fall, started to fall already in Q4, and fall further into Q1. And again, we will need to see what type of adjustments we can do upstream in order to protect our margins in this field. Turning on to the next page, it's called development in OPEX. This is where we try to show you on an apple by apple basis the effect of the cost reduction program. What you can see on a yearly basis is a reduction of our operating costs of approximately 18 million. Now, if you adjust that by the acquired costs, this is the cost base that we acquired when we bought the 13 group in our subsidiary, the R3 Entrepreneur. And then you also adjust for the new household contracts that we have won lately. This is, among other things, the Roaf contract, which has increased the cost base by 15.6 million. And also by the one-off costs at Mongstad, the cleanup and the implementation cost, NG200, and also the disruption cost, the chaos cost that I just referred to on the RDF side, then you will see that the run rate or the real cost savings apple by apple is in the range of 70 to 72 million kroners year on year. And you can compare this to the 55 million that we predicted for the full year. So the NG200 program is delivering according to plan, a little bit better than plan actually, and we will continue to chase these costs also into 2016. Lastly, from my side, sort of looking into Q1, the good news is that we are actually seeing normalized RDF inventories or inventories of waste. So we are able now to reduce the significant buildup of waste that we saw in Q4. We are monitoring this closely to make sure that this goes both smoothly and cost effectively. We have also seen to a certain degree a normalization of metal volumes. Remember that probably for a lot of customers you can hoard metal for a certain time due to your storage space. But you know, once the prices either stop falling and level out, or you run out of storage space, then you will have to start delivering again. So, as we have seen, sort of all metal prices now sort of moving in a either sideways way or you know, a slight uptick, we are seeing metal volumes starting to increase again, at least at a small rate. But we do expect Q1 revenues to be sort of 3%-4% lower than Q1 15, based on both the slowing of the Norwegian economy, sort of impacting overall volumes for all waste management players, but also the extremely low metal prices, so that we are seeing in the markets, even albeit that they have leveled out. The consequence of this is a gross margin expected then to be between 0.5 percentage point and 1 percentage point lower than in Q1, both then due to these low metal prices, which hit directly into our gross margin, but also due to the increased gate fees, especially on the waste to energy side, that we have not been able to offset yet. We will work to try to offset this, but this is a process where we have to work contract by contract in order to renegotiate prices. But we are doing this on a continuous basis. So the focus again will be on the cost reductions and productivity improvements to meet these negative effects that I just mentioned. We also believe that the maintenance capex will be a little bit south of the level of 15, so in the range of 140 to 250 million NOK. We see a very comfortable liquidity position, so that's good. And as I said, I think on one hand, we will do everything we can on the cost side in order to both streamline the company for the short term, but also for a better day. But on the other hand, also to work on the upstream price. And as I said, we have seen several of our main competitors doing the same thing, which sort of gives a little bit of an optimistic picture that the industry margins will, over a little time, normalize. The good news of this is that, of course, with a streamlined fixed cost base, And also the complete repositioning of NG means that, you know, once the market conditions improve, we expect to be able to ride the benefits of this position, which is we should be able to leverage this company in a much more efficient way than what we saw just a couple of years back. So with that, Dean, do you want to take over in terms of the P&L?
Yeah, we can go through the P&L. If we turn the page to the financials, things to mention there are, Eric has already talked a lot about the top line. We did see a total revenue decrease of 4.4% in quarter four. And as already mentioned, this was mainly due to a drop in metals volumes and a drop in commodity prices, which would affect our top line directly. We had a gross margin of 49% in quarter four of this year compared to 50.6 last year, which is 1.6 percentage point lower for the year. The gross margin came in at 50.5 versus 50.9 in quarter four 2014. In spite of this drop, the gross margin is still high historically, at least if we look at the last five years where a lot of our focus on increasing sales of ancillary products and tweaking our logistics operations has basically helped us lift gross margins from 46-47% where we started in 2012, which we are very, very pleased with. We have commented on the costs. We see that both the employee benefits cost and the other operating costs decreased in quarter four and for the year overall as a result of our NG200 program. So we're very happy with that. The Depreciation costs, you can also see, are down quite a lot in quarter four. As I have mentioned earlier, quarter two and three, we have reached our peak depreciation, and you will see our depreciation figures fall going forward. That brought us to an operating profit of a, or not operating loss, of 19.5 million in Q4 2015, which is a positive development compared to the 31.2 million in loss in quarter four 2014. For the year as a whole, we're coming in with almost 107 million compared to 89 million of last year. If we move further down the P&L, we can see that our finance costs have increased somewhat. That is mostly a function of increased payment in kind interest on the shareholder on the shareholder loans, and some foreign exchange agio effects. We also see a nice increase of net income from our associated companies. All in all, this gave us a profit loss before income tax of, or a loss before income tax of 65.2 million compared to 80.4 million of last year. For the year as a whole, 103 minus versus 183 minus in 2014. If we turn the page and look at the balance sheet, worth mentioning there is that you do see an increase of our property, plant and equipment, and of the intangible assets. This is again a result of that we have reached our peak capex cycle, and our capex would basically consist of maintenance capex going further, which is at a much lower level than what we have been investing in capex for the last 5 years on average. So you will continue to see our property, plant, equipment and the intangible assets decrease going further. This brings our total non-current assets in at 2.53 billion at the end of 2015 compared to 2.6 billion at the end of 2014, i.e. in a decrease of 86 million. If we go further and look at the current assets, we have talked a lot the last years that we have been very focused on reducing our overall inventory levels, which we have been successful with. We have had a large drop in inventories at the end of 2015, and basically have inventory levels that represent 4 to 5 weeks of production capacity. We have also been working with our trade receivables and in general improving our working capital needs. The 2015 results show that we have succeeded on that. We're down some almost 40 million NOK in trade and other receivables at the end of the year, and this has given us quite a good cash position. We're ending the year with a cash build-up of some 60 million. Part of this is, of course, due to the inventory build-up of waste, where we can contribute some 10 to 15 million in cash build-up. But even corrected for that, we have had a nice build-up of cash during 2015. So we're ending the year with 220 million in cash and an undrawn revolver of 200 million. If we turn the page, look at the equity and the liability side. We see that our equity falls in accordance with the loss for the period, which means for the full year of 2015. The quite stable non-current liabilities, we see a slight increase in our loans and borrowings. That's a result of the payment in kind, the shareholder loan, which increases with 8% annually, and a slight increase in our leasing debt. Otherwise, the other lines on the balance sheet are quite stable compared to 2014. I don't think they need any commenting beyond that. That was the balance sheet. If we turn the page again, look at the consolidated cash flow. We've had a cash flow from operating activities of 382 million compared to 385 a year earlier, which is quite stable. We see a very nice cash improvement on our investing activities, where we have gone from 245 net capex in 2014 to 136 in 2015. Again, 165 million in clean capex, and the rest are basically proceeds from sales. We sold our share in our share of 30% share in Retura during the year. We mentioned that when we presented our third quarter figures. And in addition to that, we do sell operating assets as they are renewed, and that brought in some 11 million kroner in addition to 7 million which we received for a sale of a subsidiary in July of this year, which also basically was a sale of older vehicles that we no longer use. Our net finance or our financing costs are somewhat higher this year, and that is because of the refinancing of the bond issue in 2014, where we paid 6 months interest, while in 2015 we're paying the whole 12-month interest. The sum of the cash flow is that we do have a cash and cash equivalent increase of 57.8 million, which brings, as I mentioned earlier, our total cash balance up to 220 million kroner at the end of the year, and a revolver facility of 200 million that is undrawn. If you turn the page, events after the reporting period, we have no significant events this time, so all of the significant events are well described and addressed in the quarter four report. And that brings us to the end, to a Q&A session. So I think we can open for Q&As, operator.
Ladies and gentlemen, as a reminder, if you wish to ask a question, please press star and one on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. You can cancel your request at any time by pressing the hash key. So once again, it is star and one if you wish to ask a question. And your first question is from the line of Philip Sinner of Arctic. Please go ahead.
Hi, gentlemen. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Thanks for taking my question. I have a few questions for you, actually. The first one is with regards to the interest paid, where you're showing cash interest paid of 183 million, whereas the bond loan only consume 150, I believe. So what are the remaining 30 million here paid?
Do you want to answer that first? I can do that. It's we have, as you know, we do have three large swap contracts in the amount of 1.6 billion kroner, which we are basically just to fix 60% of the interest on the loan. I believe that the bond payments are around 160, around 40 million per quarter, and the rest is payment on our swap contracts.
So the fixed rate of you've swapped 60% of the total loan into a fixed rate over the period,
yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
And
yes.
What is that fixed rate, may you?
I mean, it's well described. I don't have that on the top of me, but there are five contracts basically, and they are at different, rates. The highest one are around 2.8%, and the lowest ones that we have now are around 1.7. But if you look at our annual report for 2014, they are described in detail there.
Okay, thanks. I'll do that. My second question is with regards to the intangible assets. What do they consist of, since goodwill is a separate part of your balance sheet?
The intangible assets, they basically consist of trademarks and other PPA assignments that were done when our current owners, Altor, bought the company in 2011, where we are depreciating them over some of them over 5 years, some of them over 10. On average, there is an 8-year depreciation period on those.
Cool, thanks. And my final question. No, I have two more, actually. You were talking about the metal division being saved somewhat by hedging of the metal prices. Mm-hmm. And how do you go about hedging going forward as the metal prices have continued to stay low? And I assume your hedges are running off at some point.
Yeah, I mean, I can say, maybe Eric can just fill me up on, that we're basically doing three things regarding to metals. The first thing is that we set upstream prices on 2/3 of our volumes based on downstream solutions that we have in place. You could call that a back-to-back, basically, contracting. The problem with metal, the rest, the one-third, we do hedge, but we're hedging our physical inventories, which means that when we accept new metal, we hedge. So the contracts basically follow all of the metal volumes that we are accepting. Having said that, a problem on the metal side is that prices now are so low that to maintain the same margins that we had historically in 2013 and 14, we would basically have to pay less than zero, which means that our customers would have to pay us for accepting metals, which you probably understand isn't an easy thing to do, which is going to be the major problem going forward, at least until ferrous prices do not move upwards another couple of hundred kroner, so we can reach more of a normalized market situation. Eric, I don't know if you want to fill in on that.
No, I think there are a couple of things. One, first of all, as we have said earlier, we have reduced inventories sharply. So when we had the inventories of above 200 million, and at the current point, the inventories are down to 50 million, and that is due to lean production. So it's a lean manufacturing program that has been going on for 3-4 years. So that has been rather successful in basically reducing the need to hedge. The second level is what Dejan just talked about, is the classification that occurs when the metal sort of enters through our gates, where we are able to quite accurately predict what type of metal it is that is coming in as within sort of the mixed bag of metals that we receive, and as such we're able to sell back to back 2/3 immediately. And then there's the final point which Dale mentioned, which is the financial hedging. I must say it's been an interesting quarter, because when the Celsa index was about remember the Celsa index of ferrous was at a level of between 1100 and 1200, just over the summer, and then it over the course of the fall it fell to 700, and at that point everyone in the market were basically agreed that was hadn't seen those levels since the credit crunch, and we were actually pretty successful in at that point in collecting metals, so we ended up with 3 full shiploads of metals that we didn't have processing capacity for, so i.e. they would hit our inventories. And as such, we basically said, well, look, we are not in a position to take directional bets. So that's not what we want to do. We want to be an industrial player, not a speculator. So we actually turned around and sold all those ships to a competitor. And I believe just before Christmas, the level of the CETSA index was about 575, I believe. And the loss of those 3 ships were 30 million. So this is what I referred to when I said the successful hedging policy. We have seen a dramatic fall in metal prices, and we have avoided both a margin squeeze and also a write-down of inventories that we otherwise would have had if we had been in the old regime or in the regime that, you know, I guess most of our competitors are in. So that's the successful part of it. The unsuccessful part of it is the fact that the volume sort of disappeared. So what we have done with that is we have when volumes are reduced in Norway, we are gathering volumes outside of Norway to replace those volumes. But we are doing that at a not so good gross margin. So in other words, we're doing it to keep the utilization of our main plant at Øra up. We're not able to do that, you know, successfully at the moment, but we are, we to a certain degree, we have been able to fill the capacity with imports instead of sort of domestic volumes.
Yeah. And back to, if I can just add at the end, back to your concern about, you know, hedges that will run out. I mean, our current inventory is hedged. Whatever comes in of new inventory will be hedged in that it comes in, and we will also set the upstream prices that we pay for that based on whatever hedges we can, I mean, do.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks. My final question then goes with regards to the sale of potential real estate. As you sent the press release in August, and we haven't heard anything since.
Yeah, nothing new to report, basically. I mean, you know, I mean, as I said, we started out by exploring opportunities. It hasn't been an easy, I mean, market. And, I mean, obviously, we haven't found a solution that we, until now at least, that we found worthwhile pursuing. The real estate exercise for us is actually a balance sheet exercise. It's a question of whether we can reduce our total cost of capital by financing our real estate portfolio in a different way than what we are doing now. And if we find a solution that will give us a lower cost of capital, we would obviously consider that seriously. As long as we haven't been able to, we haven't done anything. I guess that's the only comment that I can give you now.
Sure. Thank you. That's all for me. Thanks.
Your next question from the line of Rickard Hellman of Nordea Markets. Please go ahead.
Thank you. I have some questions. Firstly, I wonder if you could give some flavor on the household division, which I read in your report that it appears that you have gained some contracts. How do we view the startup costs on these contracts? I mean, apparently you have at least two contracts that have been quite costsome in startups. And I also wonder what effect you will see from the lost tender or the two contracts that you have in Oslo. Secondly, I wonder if you will make any further cost initiatives outside the NG200. You have earlier stated that if you see continued pressure on the gross margin, you may increase the cost-cutting initiatives. And thirdly, I wonder if this networking capital positions that you have reduced quite significantly during the year, is this a level that you are satisfied with, or will you be able to squeeze out some more of it? Thank you.
Okay. Hi, Rickard. Let me start with answering at least two of the questions. The first one regarding the household division, the last one regarding net working capital, and I'll let Erik comment a bit on your cost question. Regarding the household divisions, we have first the contracts that we have won of some size that are starting going forward is basically a new contract in Grenland, which is starting in these days, which is actually a renewal of an old contract that we have had earlier. The other one is a contract in Hässleholm in Sweden, which is starting up later in 2016. In terms of startup costs, you know, I mean, usually you would see in a new contract that the startup costs are in the area of something between 500,000 to 1 million kroner. These are costs basically used just to build up the organization to put the assets in place to be able to start the contract when you are supposed to. On average, we do lose money on all new household contracts. The first year, we go break even the second year, and then we make money in year three, four, five, or six, or seven, depending on how long these contracts are. We have had a problem contract that we won last year that started in October of last year, which is the Euro-off contract, which we have commented on earlier. We lost something around $2.5 million on that contract this year. We do not believe that that contract is going to produce any profitability in the remaining 5 years of the contract. That's why we have taken we have booked a loss of 9.2 million for the group, 11.5 million for the household division in Q4. As an onerous contract, so we've taken a write down for that. And then you ask a question about the Oslo contracts. I mean, it is no secret that the Oslo contracts, there are four of them, of which we have two. They're approximately of the same size. Oslo municipality is paying 160 million per year for these contracts now, which means that our share is 80 million NOK in revenues. And these contracts are running until the end of September. So from October of next year, we will not have the 80 million in revenues for the Oslo contracts. And again, what are we doing with them in this? You know, I mean, one third of all of the municipal contracts in Scandinavia or in Norway and Sweden are coming out, are going to be tendered over the next 18 to 24 months. The largest ones being Gothenburg, being Drammen, just south of Oslo, and being Stockholm, which actually is out these days with a tender deadline of Friday of this week. We are obviously going to deliver tenders on all of these, we hopefully, of course, expect to win some of them that can replace the revenues that we are losing on Oslo. So that was the comment on the household division. Your comment on net working capital. We have been working actively to reduce our net working capital since 2012, and we have gained on that front every single year until the last quarter. We do have some special effects in Q4, as I mentioned, regarding to the inventory build-up, which gives us 10 to 15 million better working capital than what we would have had had the incinerators accepted deliveries in Q4. But again, we are at a level now that we are very comfortable with. But of course, we're going to keep on working on this and try to improve it. But I don't think you should expect any significant improvements in our working capital, at least for the next year or two. Was that an okay answer on two of your questions before I let Eric answer the last one?
Yes, indeed. Thank you.
Yeah, Eric.
Yes, on the cost reduction side, remember that the NV200 program started 20 months ago. We already at that point saw some dark clouds in the horizon for the Norwegian economy, so we started to cut. And when we summed up the gross levels for phase one and phase two, i.e. at New Year's this year, we have cut the gross cost of 275 million. These cost reductions have been offset by, you know, some cost increases in other places, both in terms of, or mainly due to growth in other places, like the household contracts or in the R3 entrepreneur and so forth, but also some of the chaos costs that I referred to earlier. But, you know, had it not been for these cost reductions, then, the picture would have been, you know, quite different. If you want to relate these costs to the overall cost base, this is 12% of OPEX, approximately. So this is where we were at the year end, and, you know, some of these costs or many of these costs will actually had full year effect in 2016. So this is, we're very happy that we have this under our belt already. But given the market and you know the sort of the accelerated negative developments in the market, and also the fact that we are not, you know, at our target level of cost reductions yet, we did initiate phase three as of new year. I have a first number, but I'm not prepared to share it yet because I'm at the moment doing quality checks, making sure that we don't not double counting and so forth on this program. But we will you know now for the spring and early summer go after sort of the last elements of the NG200 programs that we identified, you know, already 20 months back. So you should expect us to report both Q1 and Q2 with again reduced or a good effect, a good positive effect from reduced costs due to the NG200 program.
Okay, thank you. A follow-up there. If you exclude the phase three, have you communicated how much additional cost cutting you expect in 2016?
No, we have not.
And you don't want to either, I assume.
No, I think we want to, and we have done so earlier, but I don't want to do it now because, I mean, I want to make sure before we come up with a number that it's a number that there is quality behind. I have the number in my head, but I will have to get back to you with that because of to make sure that we're not double counting and so forth. So this is a program that we last week we summed up the result from all divisions together with the result from our top-down initiatives. And so that sum I have, but I want to make sure that we then didn't, you know, count things twice and three times and so forth.
Okay, thank you very much.
And your next question is from the line of Knut Vonningen of DNB. Please ask your question.
Thank you. Hi, guys. So I have two questions. First one is related to maintenance CapEx, and the second one is related to household collection. Regarding maintenance CapEx, you guide about 140 million-150 million in 2016. On my numbers, excluding amortization, that's roughly around 70% of your depreciation charges. So my question is that a normalized new level, given the fact that you're past the CapEx peak that you mentioned, or is it another measure to improve liquidity short to medium term and improve the cash flow? Second question, could you just restate your reason for taking the provision on one of those household collection contracts, and also why you believe you won't make any money on that? Thanks.
Yes, hi, Knut Olav. Your first question, maintenance CapEx, it's the new. We believe that 140, 150 million will be our new normalized level, and that is a result of the NG200 program and the fact that we have reduced the number of plants and sites, and that we will continue reducing the number of plants and, I mean, sites. Erik wants to go.
Yeah, so just to give you a picture of that, you know, over the past couple of years, we have now reduced the main sites that we were operating out of. So not all sites, but the main sites, down from 74 to 52. So a rather dramatic reduction in sites. And if you think about what drives CapEx, it's the amount of sites, and it's also the amount of cars. We are also working very, very actively to increase utilization of our vehicles. So this sort of is underpinning a reduced CapEx level. We see that we will continue to increase CapEx in terms of making our sites, you know, more effective and having sort of the latest technology, but on much fewer sites. And as such, the average level is being reduced.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, and then the household division, as I said, it was one contract, the roll-off contract. The reason for that, we have taken a provision for the onerous contract, 9.2 million, as I mentioned, for the group, 11.5 million in NGR in the household division's figures. The reason for doing that, I mean, the reason why we did that is basically that we're losing money on it. And we, I won't call it a dispute, but I'll call it a discussion with the municipality of Rouen for the time being. We're having a discussion with them because we are of the opinion that the information given in relation to that tender was not correct. That in turn led us to delivering a price that would have been different if the information was correct. They're obviously disputing this, but we are still talking to them. We haven't made any decisions yet on how, as long as we're talking, we think it is good. But what we have done is that given that the risk related to that one contract is high, we have decided to take a worst-case approach and just take the full provision based on what we believe the result of that contract will be. It's a 7+2-year contract. Based on what we believe the net present value of that contract is, given that it does continue without any changes as the contract is written now.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
There are no further questions. Please continue.
I think it's good. I mean, if there are no further questions, I want to let me just thank everyone for calling in. If you by any chance get any follow-up questions, feel free to call me. You have my contact details both in the presentation and in the Q4 report. So we thank you all, and I think we'll finish the conference here. Thank you.
That concludes the meeting today. Thank you for participating. You may disconnect.